news I gained just yesterday dismayed all that I learned. The emptiness of life examined. Time can't be.
Hello out there, and welcome to another episode of Things I Learned While Learning Other Things. This is an attempt by me, Joe Morahan, and my brother J.S. to provide you with a series of interesting, informative, educational, and yeah, we hope even enjoyable stories that will help you navigate through those high seas of life. And thank you for joining us today as we continue our discussion of Glenn Frey, entitled Already Gone. In our last podcast, by mentioning just how spectacular, but also just how unusual it was that the Eagles experienced such a phenomenal second act after that 14-year vacation, because few times in life does one ever get the opportunity to have a glorious second act. There are some notable exceptions. Steve Jobs with Apple, Ross Perot as a businessman, Andre Agassi had that phenomenal second act on the tennis courts, and maybe one might even want to add Tiger Woods to that list. But there is, of course, then Robert Downey Jr., whom I've mentioned has had one of the few really unbelievable second acts in America, given his Academy Award for his spectacular performance in Oppenheimer after he had spent time in Dante's lower levels of Malabogie. You know, he deserved that Oscar. He was phenomenal, and he defied the odds. As had Glenn Frey, Don Henley, and the Eagles before him. And during that last podcast, we mentioned that in May, it'll have been 100 months since the passing of music legend Glenn Frey, the prolific writer, co-author of so many of the hit songs multiple generations of music fans still enjoy. Glenn Frey and the Eagles, they live on. Yes, they do. And the prodigious, extensive Eagles catalog, you know, their inventory of such phenomenal songs produced over nearly a decade of hard work was very unlike the very nature of the success experienced by Creedence Clearwater Revival, whose cantankerous, malcontented, litigious, tortured genius of a lead singer, songwriter, John Fogerty. He had plumbed the depths of his soul, had been inspired in such fashion that he begat to the world 16 glorious hit songs in an arc of excellence, a condensed time frame of creative genius that lasted less than 30 months between 1969 and 1972. Unfortunately, to be followed by 15 years of fallowed silence, if you will, before John Fogerty would produce another noteworthy song. And the rest of that band, they produced nothing. You know, in the blink of an eye, Fogerty had written and orchestrated such memorable tunes as Hey Tonight, Proud Mary, Lodi, Have You Ever Seen the Rain, Bad Moon on the Rise, Fortunate Son, Who'll Stop the Rain, Down on the Corner, Susie Q, among his famous song sensations. And then suddenly, CCR was no more. It was over. They just disappeared. They disintegrated. Their stay at the very summit of the rock world, where, you know, where they were perched in 1971, was a very brief stay indeed. Unlike the Eagles as well, CCR would never return. Never. The Eagles, on the other hand, did have two long runs. They had been at, on, near the summit of the popular music world throughout the 1970s until the band just imploded of their own accord, of their own doing, in 1980. It was a tumultuous ending. You know, That same year, 1980, saw Led Zeppelin's insanely talented but just insanely self-destructive drummer, John Bonham, spin totally out of orbit. Incapacitated after downing one night 40 shots of vodka. I mean, who wouldn't be incapacitated by 40 shots of vodka? And in this incomprehensible drinking binge, he collapsed and Bonham never woke up. He choked to death on his own vomit and was declared dead on September 25th, 1980, arguably the world's greatest arena rock and roll band of their era. Led Zeppelin died along with John Bonham. And they were never reborn, never to be reformed. The Eagles began that often referred to, that, you know, now infamous 14-year vacation that same year. But no one could know at this time they'd be coming back. All that was known then, at the time, was that in a peak of anger and frustration, Glenn Frey simply walked out the door of the studio and never returned. He'd had enough. You know, I don't consider myself as, you know, ever having been some rabid fanboy of the Eagles or of any other band for that matter, either back then or now. And of course, now if I'm not wrong about this, I'm too old for any of that now. It would be so unseemly on my part to be a fanboy. Unlike, I have to say, Bill Walton, whom till this day, at roughly my age, still proudly proclaims and honors the fact that he maintains deadhead status. 29 years post Jerry Garcia's untimely but surely had to be anticipated early death due a lifelong heroin addiction and all the problems that that brings to an individual, you know, among the other unhealthy goodies on which Garcia feasted. And it would be ridiculous on my part to remain a fanboy of anything. I acknowledge and I admired then and still today the Eagles' portfolio of great songs, the product of the creative genius of Frey and Henley, and the unrelenting perfectionism to which they were totally committed. In fact, it was needed to unearth and then to sculpt such an extraordinary body of signature work. You know, that's a Rembrandt. Look over there. That's a Picasso. Oh my God, a Vermeer. And now we say, oh, hey, that's the Eagles. I mean, that's how good they were. And that's how I see it. It wasn't simply a case of musical talent joining forces with brains, hard work, and tenacity. Success demanded that there be present incredible creativity, tenacity, and depth of character, and more than a little bit of soul. They had to struggle. I mean, they fought with each other. They fought with themselves. You know, they fought with the press. They fought with music critics, record label executives, and with mogul, you know, legend himself, David Geffen in particular. And they fought with most everybody. Whether they might have been malcontents, as David Geffen once suggested, will be left for another day's discussion. Except only that while the Eagles were producing unbelievable music, they were also going through a period of struggle. I mean, and there was a lot going on in the 1970s. Let's admit that. I mean, we opened the decade with Kent State, Vietnam, Watergate, Nixon resigning, and then we ended the decade with, you know, Jimmy Carter, the Iran hostage crisis, and the Ayatollah Khomeini, a very bad man. And so, you know, using a Chinese curse, may you live in interesting times. We did. The Eagles did. And life for Eagles band members during the 1970s was, you know, by rock standards, probably pretty steady. But by the, you know, the standards of sort of the everyday people, it was a little bit tumultuous. And for them personally, it was like kind of like surviving a paranoid, megalomaniacal madman, Chairman Mao's struggle sessions. They were going through their own inner turmoils. And Chairman Mao's struggle sessions were taking place on the other side of the world as part of his, you know, insanely destructive, horrendous cultural revolution. I mean, we had in America, you know, kind of like the Woodstock generation. Well, this sociopathic, homicidal freak was killing people. So in a micro mini form, and I'm not sure it's even, it makes total sense, but I would argue that the Eagles were engaged in their own sort of Werner Erhard-like est training in their struggle sessions, you know, or if you prefer, they were immersing themselves, you know, in sort of Arthur Yanov-like primal therapy sessions of the nature John Lennon and Yoko Ono were so enamored. Yeah, I know this whole comparison has been rather absurd, more than a bit hyperbolic, actually, on my part. But the point is, the Eagles' struggle sessions, their highs and lows, they can be distinguished from Chairman Mao's struggle sessions for so many reasons that we would understand. And due to the fact that they involve the participation of far, far more females at these Eagles struggle sessions, the 3E sessions, than even the godlike Mao himself was used to. And this was a man who loved those precious young girls that were presented to the leader each night for his enjoyment, you know, of which he did so often partake, and of which he was so enamored, which is to say that there was a lot of women running around with the Eagles during the long run of the 1970s. and you know, I just keep on going off in these tangents, but it is worth remembering that Donna Rice herself, you know, was the girlfriend of Don Henley before she ever met up with Colorado Senator Gary Hart. You know, rumors of those hot tub sessions in Aspen, Henley, Fry, and the rest of them. You know, Gary Hart appeared to be, at that moment, the presumed Democratic presidential candidate in the spring of 1987. He had it in the bag, the presidency, so to speak, when the Miami Herald broke the news. You know, reported all the rumors of Gary Hart's womanizing were true. And in the ensuing scandal, all that monkey business on the yacht that was aptly, most appropriately named the monkey business, the extra marital shenanigans, you know, with that hottie Donna Rice, you know, torpedoed Gary Hart's candidacy for the presidency of the United States. Anyway, back to the Eagles band members, whom, unlike Chairman Mao, they survived their struggle sessions either weighed down by or fueled by, depending on one's perspective, a far greater reliance upon alcohol and drugs to make it through the night than did Chairman Mao. They were less homicidal, but they were far more reliant upon drugs. And I add this only because, you know, it interests me. I mean, China, thanks to the efforts of the British a century before, you know, they had created so much, you know, opium addiction to the Chinese culture. And it was up to Mao who resolved, we got to solve this problem. And he had Chairman Mao defeated Chiang Kai-shek on the battlefield, he'd certainly win the war on drugs. There was going to be no pussyfooting around here. No, it was going to be easy. The formula, the strategy of Mao, all opium dealers, irrespective of nationality, political connections, social status. They would be jailed immediately or executed without exception. Poppy growers, similarly ordered, subjected to either imprisonment or execution. Personally, Mao was indifferent as to the punishment meted out. Drug dealers, poppy growers, all details as to the administration enforcement of his anti-drug policy would be left to be managed by underlings. And no bleeding hearts objected, as would have been the case in the USA for addicts rehab programs were mandated in China. But then, apparent Chairman Mao, he didn't need to do drugs. He just got off on the enjoyment to be experienced by all those precious young girls that he had been gifted and ordering all those people killed. That is power. But I have digressed as normal. Returning to the Eagles, there was a price to be paid for all their struggle sessions. The pursuit of excellence would have, and it did, take its toll. All those women surely helped them relax a bit, get through the night, but they proved insufficient to bringing the band members their ultimate peace of mind. They served as a great distraction. Yeah, they were, sure. Most enjoyable. Yeah. A perk of fame. You bet. But not the solution to the most fundamental of the problems that accosted them. The whole 1970s scene required that they pay in 70. They were artists, man. To create inspirational works demanded suffering, and it always has. And despite all their private turmoils, or maybe because of the suffering, they were able to produce all this excellence. The Eagles painted masterpiece after masterpiece. I mean, for the Eagles, they were not unlike Fleetwood Mac, whom produced their best work ever. Surely a classic, an outrageously, breathtakingly spectacular album, Rumors, and did so amidst total band chaos. The Eagles, they hung together and carried it out for a decade. So let's stop here and we'll return with more of Already Gone in our next podcast. Thanks for tuning in and we'll be back. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Surrounding me, tap to the wind, taste the sea breeze, tropical heaven on the coral sea. A little more rum, I think of my wife. What did I do? Have I ruined my life? I tell her I've changed, become a new man. I promise I will, and I know that I can. When did the skies change? When did they turn black? How am I ever gonna get myself back? The sea's now boiling and I'm getting cold. I've lost my sails, got to find a way home. Alone in my boat, I think of my wife. I'm lost in a drift on the high seas of life. From tomorrow, days from the land, nothing can save me unless fate lends a hand. Storm it is worse and I have no control. The wind and the waves are taking their toll. I look to the stars, there's none I can see. I'm afraid fate, she has answered me. Only moments my story will end. There was a story I wanted to send. Oh, how I dream for the calm of the sea, a beautiful face smiling back at me. The sea is boiling and I'm getting cold. I've lost my sails, got to find a way home. When did the skies change? When did they turn black? How am I ever gonna get myself back? Alone in my boat, I think of my wife. I'm lost in a drift on the high seas of life. When did the skies change? When did they turn black? How am I ever gonna get myself back? Alone in my boat, I think of my wife. I'm lost in a drift on the high seas of life. See you.